Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven. That's Hugs with a Z at the end. And they can be found on the internet at www.hugsfromheaven.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. And if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how did you navigate your day today, Bob?
A lot of traffic, speaking of navigation, but everything worked out fine. And as you mentioned, we have a great guest today. Looking forward to speaking with Dr. Tucker again. Anybody that wants to know about past life memories and past lives, the subject of reincarnation, he's your man, so stay tuned.
Right, and it's been a while since we've had him on, so this is going to be exciting with his new book and everything.
Yep. What's that photo I'm looking at on your desk?
This is quite interesting, and I had pulled this out last week. I don't know if everybody recalls, but last summer, sometime around May, there was this horrific tornado in Oklahoma that actually demolished a school building with children in it. And I believe there were 7 children who died in that school, all third graders, by the way. And it included a little boy named Nicholas McCabe, who was 9 years old. And the following 4th of July, the family family members were at a July 4th celebration, and they took some photographs, particularly one of Nicholas's cousin, who appears to be about the same age as Nicholas. But when they took a look at the picture after they took it, there's clearly 2 children in the picture, not one. And when they zoom in, according to Nicholas's dad, you can even recognize the shirt that Nicholas is wearing in this picture as a shirt that he would wear all the time, a shirt that was particular to Nicholas. And I just thought that was quite interesting and something to chat about.
Well, they posted the both photos, one of Nicholas and one of the photo that he took, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's extraordinary, but it's nothing that we haven't heard before. I mean, apparitions
and
people able to somehow materialize in physical form, what we think of as physical form. Of course, it may have something to do with the photographic process. I mean, he didn't see anything out of the ordinary when he snapped the picture, I assume.
Apparently
not. But it
not.
Came out on the picture, which is what we hear very...
Which is the same thing as sound EVP. Right. You don't hear it during the recording portion of it, but when you play back the tape, that's when you hear the voices on it. So it's the same kind of scenario that takes place. What I think is interesting about this is that the father, Scott McCabe, he claims that the shirt that the boy is, that Nicholas is wearing in the picture is the one that they buried him in, and that you can actually see, these are in his words, you can make out the Red Plaza Towers T-shirt that they buried Nicholas in. What's really, really wonderful is that this man, being in Oklahoma, is not an easy place to talk about stuff like this, and that Nicholas's dad has come forward with the story because in his heart he knows that this is Nicholas. He knows this stuff is real, And like us and pretty much everybody else at Forever Family Foundation, if we don't talk about it, we're not going to change worldview.
It's interesting how this child and also other accounts where we see where they wearing clothing and clothing that can be identified. So it's one thing to materialize yourself again in physical form. It's different, like materializing other forms of matter, such as a shirt, or.
Well, if we're going to understand the concept of quote unquote creating your own reality, and that this is something that we're told by all these secret books that we have within us to do, that our souls seem to be able to do it very easily. And so when they're going to manifest their physicality to us, they are not going to manifest a naked body. They are going to manifest something that's going to be identifiable in addition to who they are.
Yeah, of course, if we're beings of thought, pure consciousness, right, and consciousness can affect matter,
right.
maybe this child, Nicholas, in a way that we don't quite understand, imprinted his image to his father of him wearing that shirt, and the camera was just acting as a medium, so to speak, and so he was able to see it in the form of a photograph, but maybe it has nothing to do with a materialization. Maybe it came more from the mind of the person taking the picture.
Oh, I see what you're saying. My gut on both tape-recorded EVP and image EVP is that they're not necessarily affecting, although they probably can, affect the roll of film or the digital camera or the tape recording digital device or tape device to quote unquote imprint themselves on it. But what if they were just saying, here I am standing right behind this other person in the picture, and although you can't see me, I'm going to affect the mechanics of the camera or the tape recorder, whatever it is, so that when it does come through as an image, that I will be in there.
It's sort of, freezing time.
Yeah.
They're just methods of in quantum physics, you talk about, collapsing the wave,
right.
The observation, sort of captures it and turns it into what we call reality.
When does the observation take place? When the person is snapping the picture or when the camera takes the picture?
Well, there's been experiments like that because it raises an interesting question. What is observation? Does it have to be observation from a human, or if you set up a camera to observe something, whether it maybe it's electrons being shot through a slit, does the camera count as observation? Or does it have to be a human eye that collapses a wave, into a particle?
Or does it have to be a human? Or does it have to be something that is part of the physical world? Can the observer be part of the non-physical world?
I don't see why not. It probably works the same way when you're in the so-called spirit world. The same principles take place.
It just seems
the waves
like,
and particles.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jim B. Tucker. So stay with us, and we will be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who is trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and that's Hugs spelled H-U-G-Z with a Z at the end. And they could be found on the internet at www.hugsfromheaven.com. Bob?
And Jim B. Tucker, M.D., is Bonner Lowry Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia. He's continuing the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies with children who report memories of previous lives. Jim is a board-certified child psychiatrist who worked with Dr. Stevenson for several years before taking over the research upon Dr. Stevenson's retirement. Dr. Tucker has published two books, numerous papers in scientific journals. His first book was Life Before Life, A Scientific Investigation of Children's Memories of Previous Lives. And his new current book, which we're going to be talking about today, is Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. Dr. Tucker has spoken before both scientific and general audiences. He's made many TV appearances, a great many radio appearances, and on TV. He's been on Good Morning America, Larry King Live, CBS Sunday Morning, and some others. The website is jimbtucker.com, and welcome, Dr. Tucker.
Thank you very much for having me back.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You know, where I wanted to start, I mean, I thought about this when I first learned about your work and the fact that you're a psychiatrist and you're studying past lives. And when I think about it, I mean, the skeptics and those unfamiliar with the evidence might say, well, of course he's a psychiatrist because anyone claiming to have a past life is crazy. You know, then others who are open-minded and aware of the process might reason that since the investigation of cases requires the investigator to determine if a child is making something up or imagining a past life, then who better to do the research than a medical doctor that knows the intricacies of human behavior? So I guess my question is, As a psychiatrist, are you better able to conduct such investigations than a layperson?
Well, I certainly hope that I'm skilled at talking to people. being a psychiatrist, I mean, that's what I do. And
right.
Being a child psychiatrist in particular, I hope that I'm good at making kids comfortable and being able to talk with them. We have looked at the question of whether there may be mental health issues involved in these cases. We did a small American study where we tested 15 kids or ages 3 to 6 who were having these reports of memories. And what we found was that they were quite bright. In the general population, the mean on an IQ test is 100. Out of the 15 kids, only one had an IQ under 100, and hers was 99. And some of them were very bright. But otherwise, they seemed to be perfectly normal. When we did behavioral scales and what's called a dissociation scale, we did not see any pathology. What we saw were kids that were functioning just fine, who happened to be very intelligent and verbal, which probably helps with the cases. Mm. And there have been similar studies done in Europe by a colleague of ours. When I say Europe, actually, I mean Lebanon and Sri Lanka. Similar results. The kids generally are quite bright. They're generally high functioning. Some of them show some mild anxiety symptoms, maybe related to the traumatic events they're experiencing. But they aren't crazy. And these are kids where when you follow them as they get older, they turn out to be functioning just fine, and some of them doing exceedingly well.
So let's back up a minute. I mean, it's an understatement to say that there are a few medical doctors that leave private practice to start researching past lives. So what was it about past lives that intrigued you to make you want to do such research?
Well, it wasn't so much past lives as it was the question of life after death and the idea of exploring that question scientifically. As you say, I was in private practice and sort of minding my own business and just having a routine life. But when my wife and I got together, she was open to ideas like reincarnation. And sort of being with her kind of was an awakening for me in many ways, but it also got me curious about these things. And then I happened to be reading one of Ian Stevenson's books when we saw that they had gotten a grant to start a new study on near-death experiences. So I thinking it'd be nice to have a hobby like that. I called them up to see if they needed help, volunteer help interviewing patients. And sort of one thing led to another. But, you know, I think for all of us, at one time or another, we wonder about this question of life after death, that can we survive when we die? And this was an opportunity to explore that question and to try to find out for myself what I might conclude from it.
Mm. Now, I learned a bit about a lot of things, I should say, that I didn't know from reading, you know, Return to Life, some of the stuff that wasn't covered in your first book. And right off the bat, I mean, you wrote about one case of a young girl named, I think it was, I don't know how to pronounce it, Ampan. And she remembered a past life. But what intrigued me was that she stated that her previous person died at the hospital, and then she described watching her body being taken away in an ambulance, and then even said that she ran after the ambulance but couldn't catch it. I mean, is this common in many of your cases where subjects talk about time in between the prior person's death and the life in a new body?
Well, it's about 20% of the kids will. And some of them describe sort of earthly events of kind of observing things that happened, like the previous funeral or in this case, you have the little girl trying to, as she described it, chase after this ambulance to get her way back home, and then eventually kind of giving up and coming to rest and then being born to the mom who was there. Some of the other kids will talk about going to other realms like heaven, where the American kids may use the term heaven. And then some of them will talk about choosing their next parents or being led to their next parents. Most of the kids don't say these things. And usually the ones that do what they say, they're unverified. I mean, obviously, the reports about heaven are unverifiable. But sometimes the earthly events they describe are verified to be accurate. So it seems, I mean, what they're describing, like with that girl, is sort of the spirit sort of hanging around and then attaching to a new body. And that's what some of the kids describe.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like her experience. I thought I was reading like an NDE account, you know, where people are out of body and report these veridical experiences. So it's really the same thing, isn't it? In a sense, the near-death experiencer is kind of in between lives. I mean, the difference being the experience goes back to the same life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, there are obviously going to be some differences because in an NDE, then the person is pulled back into their body, whereas with these, that doesn't happen, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of similarities, and it's – I mean, there can be some differences just as there are differences between individual NDE reports. But overall, it's a very similar kind of phenomenon, really, that they're describing. So as I think I mentioned in the book, to me, that's an argument against the idea that NDEs are just sort of firings of the neurons as the brain's dying, because these kids who are telling these stories, their brains aren't dying. They're perfectly healthy, and yet they're relating very similar kinds of events to what many people have described with near-death experiences.
Yeah, it was interesting. We hold these afterlife discussion groups, you know, throughout the United States, and Fran and I run one in New York, and at our last group meeting, we got into this discussion of your work and of children's memories of past lives, and one of the people in the group was a near-death experiencer, and afterwards she said, you know what, she said, I kind of think of my experience as being reincarnation. I died, and I came back into a body. It just happened that she came back into the same body. That was an interesting perspective, you know.
Yeah, I got a report that within the last couple of weeks that, to be honest with you, I just read today, but an email from a person who said when he was little, he got stung by a bunch of yellow jackets and had a near-death experience where he was led to a couple down the street, and he had the sense that if he stayed with them, he would become their child. But eventually, he went back to his body and survived, obviously, and came to. And he said that the couple had a baby 9 months later. It was both a NDE and a reincarnation case all in one.
Yeah. Well, we may be talking about the same thing. So it's I think everything's all related. Another fascinating thing from your book, Return to Life, which I never considered, but there are cases of children developing memories of a person who died after the child had been born. So, you know, what would be a possible theory of how that could occur?
Yeah, and those are ones that Ian Stevenson called anomalous dates cases, which is, you know, really a bland name for what we're talking about, where, I mean, in the typical case, what happens is the child will become very ill, and then when he or she recovers, seemingly have developed these sort of new memories. And there's one case, I guess is in the book, where case I studied where the little boy developed what, I mean, you can't call it a birthmark because it wasn't when he was born, but developed marks on his arm that matched a tattoo of his uncle who had been killed in a motorcycle accident. And then he developed memories of the uncle, of being the uncle. And it's, I mean, what it looks like is when the person is sick enough and near death that there's this sort of window of opportunity for another consciousness or spirit or whatever you want to call it to kind of move in and take over. Or maybe the boundary between the worlds gets thinner, where presumably the consciousness who has been inhabited kind of moves out and another one moves in.
Yeah, I think you refer to it in the book as a possible soul tug of war, you know, with one soul pushing out an existing soul.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, you know, it's kind of strange even by our standards to think of that. But there are these cases where it's certainly on the face of it, that seems like that's what's happened.
Yeah. You know, when I read about, you know, some of the cases that you really get into, it's sort of like, reading about an episode of CSI. I mean, you really have to be an investigator and a detective and a researcher and a scientist all at once. So, you know, what's the most important thing? I would imagine the hardest part of your work are the logistics. I mean, learning about a case early and then, the actually going out and visiting the family in some timely fashion. So are those your challenges?
And hearing about the case soon enough in order to do that. I mean, I would say, you know, one chapter on the Asian cases, but it's the American cases that I've studied. And a lot of time we get reports from American parents all the time. But for some reason, American kids don't tend to give names or names of places. So many of them, it's impossible to verify their stories. But with the ones where they can be verified, then it can become, like you say, a real detective story of trying to find out who they were talking about. And the other catch is getting to it soon enough where we have good documentation of what the child said before that previous person was identified. So we know that there's no sort of post-game mixing of the facts where kids are getting credited with more knowledge than they actually had. You know, so if we can get documentation of the child's statements ahead of time, then that can really make for a very strong case.
Mm. Now, I know that as an investigator and a researcher, it's in your best interest to have some more awareness about the evidence, you know, of past lives in this country. A lot of the cases, as you mentioned, from Asia, where, you know, the concept of reincarnation is readily accepted and talked about frequently. But you wrote about a case in your current book, In Return to Life, which is quite extraordinary, the case of James Leininger.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you read through it and you go into great detail, it really is, you know, defies a traditional thinking. So can you just give us a listeners a little synopsis? Some of them may be familiar with it because I know it was publicized episodes.
Yeah. But in fact, James's parents eventually wrote a book about their experiences. But yeah, it's a remarkable case, and James was he was under two when it really started. He is a little boy who reported being a World War II pilot who was shot and killed over the Pacific. And the case started when Dad took him to a flight museum before he was even two. And he was just enthralled by the World War II plane exhibit to the point that they ended up spending 3 hours there, which, you know, for those of us who are parents, thinking about having a toddler in a museum for 3 hours is fairly itself. And then a couple of months after that, so he develops his fascination with planes, but a couple of months after that starts having horrific nightmares of being in a plane crash, screaming, airplane crash on fire, little man can't get out, thrashing his legs up in the air. And he was doing this 4 or 5 times a week. And during the day, he would take his toy planes and repeatedly say, airplane crash on fire, and bang them into the coffee table. And eventually started coming out with a story saying that he had been a pilot who had been shot down by the Japanese, and his plane flew off of a boat. His parents asked him what the name of the boat was, and he said Natoma, which I think is a fairly bizarre guess of an American aircraft carrier, but it turned out that there was the USS Natoma Bay that was, in fact, in the Pacific during World War II. He also said that he was shot at Iwo Jima, and that when they would ask him his name, he would say me or James, and he also said that there was a friend there named Jack Larson. Well, it turned out that there was one pilot from the Natoma Bay that was killed in the Iwo Jima operation, and his name was James as well, only it was James Houston. And the details that James Leininger gave about the crash matched perfectly with how Houston's plane went down, how it was shot right in the engine, crashed in the water, and quickly sank. And when that happened, the pilot of the plane next to his was named Jack Larson. And this was all completely obscure, and it took his dad years to unearth it all. But we've got documentation of what James said before Dad was able to find out who James Houston was. So it's very hard to explain away with any ordinary kind of explanation. In fact, I would defy someone to do it. I would defy anyone to read the chapter in my book and then tell me how they would explain it, because it is certainly a remarkable case.
It is. It truly is. And as you just mentioned, a handful of facts, but there are so many little obscure details, even about the mechanics of the plane and things that he couldn't possibly have known. As you said, the adults had to dig and dig and dig, and you had to investigate to come up with these things. So it truly is probably one of the most, I would imagine, one of the most evidential cases you've come across.
It certainly, yes, certainly for me personally. I mean, Ian Stevenson, obviously, over his 40 years, collected a lot of very strong cases in Asia. But, boy, it's hard to come up with a case that would be much stronger than that one.
Mm. You know what else caught my eye when you wrote about that James said that he picked his father, you know, that he knew that this man would make a good dad. You know, is this something that you come across often with children talk about picking their parents?
It is something that you hear fairly often. And, you know, what James did, not only did he say he picked him, but he said he did it when they were in Hawaii at the big pink hotel. And even that he saw them eating dinner on the beach. And it turned out they had eaten dinner on the beach at a big pink hotel in Hawaii, and it was on that trip that they began trying to conceive, and they didn't actually get pregnant on that trip, but that was when the intention was there. And wow, that's you know, quite a good story. And it,
yeah, it's, what could you say? I mean, it defies explanation, really. The you know, you also had another chapter in the book that talked about a child who remembered a past life as a golfer, but also was a golf prodigy. The child was, you know, himself. So I know a lot of people might say, a lot of people that we label as prodigies actually might be the reincarnation of somebody who had such skills. I mean, do you subscribe to that theory that prodigies are reincarnated skillful people?
Well, that's certainly possible. I mean, the thing is that prodigies, as far as I'm aware of, none of them have had specific past life memories. So child prodigy is certainly a phenomenon that we don't have a good understanding of by any means. I mean, where a Mozart develops, or not develops, but comes out basically out of the womb with that kind of talent. But yeah, I mean, this is a case where, I don't know if you call him a prodigy or not, but he apparently had one heck of a golf swing at age two, enough where the golf club would take him to start giving him lessons, even though normally they wouldn't start until age five. And then as he's grown, he's at one point won 21 golf tournaments in a row. So, you know, that's an example that, yeah, that does make you wonder about other prodigies. They may not have the specific memories of a past life, but perhaps they got a real head start with their skills because of things they had experienced before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to go to a break. There's a lot more to talk about. I encourage everybody to stay with us. We've been talking with Dr. Jim B. Tucker, MD, and the book is Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparizetti.com. That's drparizetti in one word, .com.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven. That's Hugs with a Z at the end, and they can be found on the internet at www.hugsfromheaven.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7777. And now before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation messages for our listeners. There are three ways to show us you like us on Signs of Life Radio. Go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Or you can use the donate button on any one of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time that card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in the more than 1,400 online stores like Red Envelope, Apple Store, Drugstore.com, Old Navy, A portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and the drawing is just 11 days away on December 23rd. Win a one-hour phone reading with one of our certified mediums in this raffle, Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadal. It's only $5 a chance. Our annual December Holidays Past events have begun. These are all special Saturday nights in December when many who have lost loved ones would rather not be at a holiday party. So we've asked our certified mediums to spend an evening inviting in those who have crossed before us to share their love and messages. We shout out love and gratitude to Suri Bernstein for such a moving and significant evening last Saturday night in Natick, Massachusetts. We also look forward to our sold-out event tomorrow night in Oceanside, New York, with medium Bobby Allison. And we also have on our schedule a holiday evening of spirit communication in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, with medium Janet Nohavik on December 14th. And on December 21st, it's Angelina Diana in South Windsor, Connecticut, and Amy Utzman in Fort Myers, Florida. Reservations and information pages are up on the Forever Family Foundation website. Back to you, Bob.
And we are back with Dr. Jim B. Tucker. The book is Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. Dr. Tucker's website is his name, jimbtucker.com. And Jim, one thing we touched on before that I wanted to get back to because it's so evidential in a lot of the cases is that of birthmarks and markings. So a lot of people may not be familiar with that. So just can we touch on that a bit? And what are these markings and how they might occur?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, these are a lot of the cases that Ian Stevenson investigated. In particular, he was very interested in this phenomenon, are cases where the children, in addition to talking about a past life, were also born with birthmarks or birth defects that match wounds on the body of the previous person, usually the fatal wounds. And he published a book with 200 such cases in it, and called Reincarnation in Biology. It was 2,000 pages long, so it's quite a thorough work. But it would seem that a wound that a person experiences can somehow be carried with their consciousness as they then move on to another life. And the way that I conceptualize it is that it's not the wound per se, but more the conscious experience of it, and the individual or the soul, whatever you want to call it, as they experience the trauma of dying, this memory is ingrained in them the way, like with post-traumatic stress disorder, where there are images that people can't get rid of. And then we know from other work that sometimes mental images can have very specific effects on the body, and it would seem in this case that if the consciousness moves to a new developing brain, developing body, that image from the previous death can then affect the fetus as it develops, so that the child is then born with a very similar birthmark or birth defect.
Yeah, so it has a lot more to do with consciousness than biology, you know.
I mean, I see how it couldn't, because, like, yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, the body is then cremated, and it's not like there are any effects of that show up.
Right.
But more, yeah, the conscious experience that then has the effect.
Yeah, and I know there have been cases, for instance, where somebody has as in many of these cases, the previous person had a violent or an accidental type of death, and so there have been cases where somebody's been shot, and then the new person has markings, and you've pulled autopsy reports, and the markings are exactly where the wounds appeared in the previous person, right?
Well, that's right. Both, I mean, Ian reported 18 cases where the child is born with double birthmarks that match both the entrance and the exit wound of a victim who was shot.
That's pretty extraordinary. So what do you say to somebody that says, well, reincarnation is not, could not be real, that these children are simply psychic and they're accessing, you know, the memories of the deceased person. They're somehow tapping into an information field. So, I mean, I guess, you know, that the super psi theory is hard to be refuted in any of these disciplines that we study. But, you know, I mean, do you get asked that a lot?
Yes, that certainly comes up. And yeah. I think, first of all, the birthmark cases, I think, are a little harder to explain in that way.
Yeah.
You know, how you access an information vault and that somehow leads to a birthmark. But it's certainly completely counter to the children's experience of it. I mean, it's not just memories that they report, but they're the emotions of experiences that they remember having. So, you know, there are kids that beg to be taken to the previous family every day, and kids who really cry and miss things or people, and it's completely more than just information like a psychic might get from you know, clairvoyantly holding a car keys or something. I mean, this is very much of by their experience is very much memories of a life they had and not just random information. I mean, the other fact is that with some exceptions, most of the children don't show any other psychic kind of abilities. Now, there are exceptions with that, but it would be sort of bizarre that, like, James Leininger would have this incredible connection with this James Houston, who died 50 years before in the Pacific, and have no other psychic abilities. I mean, to me, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, the children describe, you know, the personalities in great detail, right? So it's hard to conceive how you pull personalities out of an information field, you know?
Well, so, that's right, and we've also, we've with each case, we code them on 200 variables, and some of them are personality features. And what we have found is that there is a correlation with five or six personality features that we code for with the amount in the previous person and the amount in the child. So if the previous person, for instance, tends to be very generous, then the child would be more likely to be very generous. So that would certainly suggest some personality carryover that again would be hard to explain as just a child tapping into information.
Mm. Now, I mean, I realize that this is just conjecture and that you can't answer this from a purely scientific perspective, but I guess maybe more on a personal level. I mean, assuming that reincarnation, you know, is real, I mean, do you think it becomes a choice whether one returns to the physical, another physical body, or does everyone reincarnate?
Well, certainly these cases do not show that everybody reincarnates. And in fact, you can make an argument that they provide more evidence for the opposite, in the sense that 70% of the previous people died by unnatural means, meaning murder, suicide, or accident. And also the people tend to, as a separate factor, tend to be quite young when they die. So it would seem that it's much more likely in these sort of exceptional circumstances of a death for the child to at least to have memories. And it may well be that the normal state of affairs is that the consciousness goes to other realms or is not necessarily held to this one existence on the planet Earth. Now, at the same time, it may be very well maybe that we all come back and most of us just don't have the memories. But but I don't necessarily see evidence for that.
Yeah. I'll tell you another thing that we hear a lot, and maybe you can comment on it. Some people say to us, boy, especially people that have lost loved ones, and they say, I hope there's not reincarnation, because that means that, you know, when I die, and I'm not going to be able to see my loved one again, because if they already reincarnated, they won't be there anymore. But that may not necessarily be the case, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm not sure that time would work the same way on the other realm as it would here. So, frankly, I wouldn't worry about that too much. I mean, I think, you know, certainly if you look at NDE accounts, that people do see deceased relatives, even ones that have been dead for quite some time. And I think it may well be that there can be an existence both in sort of that world as well as this world in a way that sort of seems simultaneous, but is just more complicated, really, than we can understand.
Mm. It's also interesting how most of the cases involve people returning to the same country or even close to the same geographical area as the previous person. What do you think that is?
Well, I think that as we move forward with experiences and perhaps with more lives, that there's sort of a draw to the familiar. So it would be more likely to have a next life that in some ways was similar to the one that you had before. Now, I mean, it's possible that there are geographical constrictions on a consciousness after you die, but that to me doesn't seem all that likely. There would be these physical constraints on the non-physical, but I can imagine that there would be sort of emotional or mental constraints, so that it would be difficult to move to a completely different kind of life. Now, the other thing I should add is that our cases where there are discrete memories that come through may not be typical of what happens. And our kids, James Leininger is a big exception, but with our cases, they tend to come back very quickly. The median period between the death of the previous person and the birth of the child is only 16 months. So they tend to be very recent cases. And it may be that these sort of souls that come back very quickly are just sort of one end of the bell curve. And right. And if you look at other cases, then they may not have these constraints and they may well go to other countries or other planets or whatever. But that's the pattern we see in ours.
And we have been talking with Dr. Jim Tucker, the author of Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. It's an excellent book. I encourage everybody to pick it up. And I'll tease the audience. We've run out of time, but Dr. Tucker has a very interesting theory of about dreams. Somehow we're all part of a shared dream. And if you want to learn more about that dream theory and a continuum of life, you'll have to read the book. So I thank you so much, Jim, for joining us. I'd also like to mention your website again, jimbtucker.com, and we hope you come back and join us real soon.
Well, thanks, Bob. It's been great talking to you again, and I'd love to come back.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Leanne Ashley, David Mello, Phyllis Alexander, Betty Alexander, Ann Hutchinson, John Cahali, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel S., Jeanette Davies, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Marian Pierzga, Laura Prisco, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Glenna Irwin, Barbara Patillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, Eileen Lafada, Mark Farron, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Barbara Russell, Tim Donahue, Francis Mastracco, and Jean Lash. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.